Put it in park, pal. You've reached the diner. On the air since 1997, doing 110 down the information superhighway since 2005, and now available in handy podcast form so you can listen while you drive. It's the New Car Edition, Friday, May 26th, 2006. Welcome.
Yes, indeed, indeed.
Broke down on the side of the road, damn brakes locked up in the rain. Smoke's pouring out from under my hood, I'm stuck on the highway again. Too young to quit, too old to change. Baby, what am I gonna do? We got the chop top slammed down, 49 Mercury Blues.
Ah, who am I kidding? Today I drive a car that belongs in a Brian Setzer song is the day that Chuck Berry pats me on the back and says, "Nice riff, kid. Never thought of that one." Hi, folks. James Lilacs here at the diner, at my accustomed place of the long boomerang pattern for Micah Counter, at the diner on an old Highway 23 about 18 and a half minutes from wherever you happen to be right now, regardless of what you may happen to be driving. Me? I'm driving something new. Would you like to see it? You would? All right. Well, we'll head out in the parking lot in just a few minutes here. But let me just consult my stack of things and figure out exactly what we're to do today. I mean, nobody wants to hear about the car. I realize that. It's quite obvious. People indulge, people nod their heads, people say, "Oh, what'd you get?" And they say, "Oh, let me go see it," as if it's going to be something indistinguishable from the other boxes, the other little beige machines that people drive around. Yeah, cars are cars nowadays, alas. Didn't used to be this. I mean, I still cannot figure out why nobody has realized that if you brought back a car with tail fins, and I mean tail fins, I mean those things that could put somebody's eyes out if you backed up wrong. Those things, they'd sell like crazy. If you brought back the 1957 Bel Air two-tone top-down with tail fins, my God, they'd sell a million of those things. But no, they don't. Why? Because they're keeping it from us. There is some grand, well, none dare call it conspiracy. I'll just say a failure of imagination on the part of the American car manufacturers to look back into their history and figure out what people respond to. And by respond, I mean, of course, get that faraway look in their eyes and the small little dribble of drool in the corner and the weakness in the knees and the involuntary thrusting of the hips. That's what I mean, that sort of car response. I did not have that response to the car that I purchased. I haven't had that response to a car that I purchased since 1997, unfortunately. And that was a car that I had to sell because it was unsafe. For children. Well, for adult. Well, for human beings. Yeah, but it was fun, and it was fast, and it was silver, and it was small. I'm a small guy. It's a small car. It's great. Now, usually you want to have, you know, you don't want the little alarm key fob that you have to have a ratio of 1 to 10 to your car. It wasn't that small, but it was small. Mean little thing, though. And I gave it up because I needed something, as I said, that could enclose the tot safely, as I explained to my daughter the other day. You know, I sold the car because I had to get the one we're driving now, and she said, "Because you loved me more than the car." I mean, what are you going to say? Look, you were 4 or 5 weeks, okay? Love is probably the right word, but it's sort of a, well, it's almost a theoretical construct at that point, really. I mean, it's a series of biological chemical reactions in the brain designed to make the man stay around long enough to, you know, to make sure that the kid is fed, after which he can, of course, join another tribe or get killed, stamped on by a mastodon or whatever. I don't know. The real love, the whole total love package is going to come later. But at 4 weeks, you're a noisy, excreting, red, howling little rutabaga, okay? And I gave up my sports car for a rutabaga! But you don't say that. Anyway, the first car that I had was a hand-me-down, of course. It's the way it should be. It was a panel truck, as we called vans back then. And don't get any Chevy van ideas. You know, with a waterbed in the back and a little smoked glass window poked in the side and the airbrushed picture of a beach scene. Nah. You know, this is the car that I used, the van, the panel truck that I used to haul around TBA, those being tires, comma, batteries, comma, and accessories. Three items that every gas station in Fargo had to be stocked with. And since my dad was the TBA distributor for Fargo, I, for a summer, was the reluctant distributor of the distributor's products. So I would go around from station to station feeling grossly out of place. I never fit in a gas station, ever. Which you think would be odd, don't you? Your dad runs a gas station. Don't you think you just have that in your blood somehow? Well, I didn't. And I've always tried to wonder exactly why. Could it be just intellectual disposition? I was more of a bookish nerd who preferred to stay home with comic books and chemistry sets. And the whole gas station thing just didn't do much for me. The smell of it, I didn't like. It, later, of course, I came to love the smell of gasoline. And now, when I smell it, I, of course, think of my childhood. Which, given the olfactory connotations, you'd think I grew up in an actual tank itself underground. But no, my dad just smelled of gasoline and oil all the time. He had no sense of it himself. His sense of smell had been long erased by exposure to these things, or something else, we don't know. But he couldn't smell gas, so it was nothing to him. So he'd come home, though, with this, you know, with a great Texaco perfume, and that was the smell of my childhood. And you can imagine why it has good nostalgic connotations today, because he did not subsequently beat me. That would have really gone a long ways to turning me off gasoline, and I'd be one of those strange people with the long, crank gray beards and the recumbent bike driving around. Well, it saves the earth. And this is posture is orthopedically correct. Also, my dad stunk of gas and beat me. It's probably behind every one of those guys on the recumbent bikes. An old relative back there, you know, with a baseball bat and reeking of ethyl. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, the gas station. I would go out to the gas station with my dad, and from time to time, you know, as a kid, and I always was sort of the boss's son, which was made you feel weird. You know, the other guys are looking at you, and you're kind of a kid with glasses, and there's nothing mechanical about you. You're the boss's son. And then I got my hand stuck in the machinery. There's a lot of dangerous equipment around a gas station, of course. The lifts. I loved to play with the lifts. They were fascinating, these pneumatic devices that would put the cars up in the air so the guys could work on them underneath. And just to run and operate that lift as a kid was a great thrill. No, I did not drop the lift on my foot. That was impossible. There were fail-safe measures. However, there was no fail-safe measure attached to the ringer through which they put the chamois. They'd polish the cars to a nice finish with a chamois, and then they'd run them through the ringer. And you'd think, given that a ringer is fairly upfront about what it does and how it does it, it would be hard to get your hand caught in it. But I did. I got my hand caught in the ringer, and as the first few fingers started going through, of course, I shrieked like a stuck pig whose hoof has been put into a ringer. And, you know, one of the guys came running up and turned the thing off. And wouldn't you know it, that was the one guy who never left the gas station for years. He was always the sole employee. Nothing would get rid of this guy. He was eternal. And so every time I saw him, be it at the age of 8 or 10 or 12 or 14 or 16, there he was, the living manifestation of my shame, of getting my hand caught in the mangler. And it's obvious that if you get your hand caught in the mangler, that your mechanical aptitude is zero, nil, zip. So I just stayed away from the gas station. Except for that summer, of course, that I painted one of the tanks, which was a job. And my dad had a couple of satellite operations where he would store various solvents and, you know, lubes and the like. And just to teach me what it was like to work for a living, he would send me out there in the hot sun to paint those things. Silver. Miserable job. I was right next to an auto body dealership, too, so between the combination of the fumes wafting off the tank, the fumes coming from the paint, and the stuff coming from the body shop next door, I am entirely certain that my DNA was rearranged in most interesting fashions, and that had I had a child at that age, it probably would have looked like something out of an Ed Big Daddy Roth cartoon. So that was part of the summer. The other summer was driving around in the paddle truck and delivering tires, batteries, and or accessories, depending on what they wanted. Fan belts, that sort of thing. Well, the one thing I learned right away was how to park a vehicle that essentially has, well, it's got, you know, you can look in the back and see what's back there, but you've got to look through the entirety of the vehicle through these tiny porthole windows, so there's not much you can do there. And there's nothing on the side. There's no visibility on the side whatsoever. It's like trying to parallel park a boxcar from a train. And I learned how to do that, so I was quite pleased with myself. I had, of course, failed my driver's license the first time I took it. I took it in the family LTD, which is a fairly substantial car. And I got on the instructor's bad side, straight off the bat. I asked him to buckle up. And he said, just drive. Now, this is a state trooper, for heaven's sakes. He's living. You know what? He's lost his will to live. Apparently, he's just. What do you mean? Just buckle up, for heaven's sakes. So I don't know right now if I'm going to get dinged for the fact that I didn't force him to buckle up. But the guy's, you know, 290 pounds of beef, and I'm this, you know, little stripling here behind the wheel of a large American automobile. I can't make him buckle up. So we drive, and I figure I've lost it already. I don't know what's up, what's down. I made a right turn on red without looking, and while we didn't die, he may have for a second rethought his decision not to buckle up. He failed me. I went back, took the test again, and that was the beginning of my driving career. My cars have been in the following order: a depressing array of featureless, joyless American metal. First there was the van, which was okay. It was followed by an AMC Pacer. I actually liked that Pacer. I loved that Pacer. It was orange. It was a big pumpkin. It was a big futuristic pumpkin with glass, like you wouldn't believe. It was almost like a Jetson-esque car, except it stayed on the ground. That was followed by what? A Buick Skylark. One of the most... Oh, just... My heart sinks to think of it. I mean, it's just one of those sort of anti... It's like... I don't know quite... It made me invisible to women. I'm convinced of it. And I don't believe that women necessarily judge you on your car. They'll judge you if your car choice is really, really, really flashy and bad. Like, for example, my wife, when she first found that I drove a Probe, was crestfallen because, first of all, the name of the thing sounds like I'm driving, you know, Ford Speculum. And secondly, because she regarded the Probe, especially with its turbocharged features, as the automotive equivalent, well, not the automotive equivalent, but the actual auto that you would find driven by somebody in a wife beater whose gold medallion rested on a tuft of chest hair. Just wasn't the kind of car she thought she'd find in a guy she was dating. Had that car for 7 years. Anyway, after the Skylark, which was just like, it made me invisible to women. It's like if I met somebody at a party and I picked them up in this Skylark or Skyhawk, they would see the car and they would forget that they had ever met me. And when I came to the door, they'd look at me like, "Who are you and why are you here?" I had that car for 5 years, and then the Probe, which served me, which was just an undependable thing, shall we say. It developed a mechanical electrical problem that no mechanic could ever figure out. And of course, now I'm dealing with mechanics in Washington, D.C., who, shall we say, were not always at the top of their game. But they could not figure out why the car just went dead. All they said was there's some drain in it. And the only way that I could combat the drain was to remove two little fuses every time I got out of the car. For two years while I went through it, it was the automotive equivalent of the Oak Island water feature. I would have to go pop the hood and take out the fuses after I drove it anywhere. Maddening. Traded that in for, gosh, yes, for my little Eclipse, the aforementioned small little car. And then after that, the Honda CR-V, and now the car that I have now. You want to go see it? It's in the parking lot. Let's go take a look. Let me look at the jukebox here and see if I can find some apt new car music. Well, this is good, from the Tucker soundtrack by Joe Jackson. Of course. Ladies and gentlemen, the car of tomorrow.
Come on, let's go. Come with me. Outside. It's right outside. There it is. What do you think? Oh, come on! It's not that boring. What do you expect? It's gotta be safe. I can't drag around a kid in a Mustang. I need some place to put the groceries. And look! See this? Suicide doors!
I admit it's not the sexiest car, the Honda Element, but I like it. All right? I admit it's a little boxy. It actually looks like the box a much cooler car came in, but I still think it looks almost sort of rather cool, or I wouldn't have bought it, so get off my back. You know, didn't check the chalkboard by the door to see what the menu specials are today. What do they have? Well, that's very nice of them. That's very sweet. They have a Honda Element style meatloaf. They have recreated the shape of my car in meatloaf format. It's very easy to do. I guess you just take one slab and put it down on its side, then you just cut another slab in half and put it on top. Well, maybe my next car will be able to be sculpted only in the genre of mashed potatoes, but not this time. And anyway, I like this car. So there. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsor. Or what would have been the sponsor if they sponsored this show. Which they haven't.
Here are some most happy fellas, the four lads for Ford.
Standing on the corner, watching all the Fords go by. Standing on the corner, giving all the Fords the eye. Look at it go, it's the Thunderbirds kissing cousin. Get in a Ford, give Ford a try. So don't be standing on the corner, watching all the Fords, be the guy who's going by.
Yes, be the guy who's going by in a powerful Ford V8. Be the guy who's proud of that Thunderbird look, who enjoys Ford's solid big car ride. Be the guy who saves with Ford's low price and gas savings. See your Ford dealer.
Oh. Meatloaf is actually pretty good. Looking at the little brochure that came with it, apparently the meatloaf, 70% of the ingredients came from the United States, 10% from Mexico, and the balance from Japan, and it was assembled with pride in Tennessee. So, that bodes well, I think, for the American meatloaf industry, and I think reports of the demise of the American meatloaf industrial base have been greatly exaggerated. I should play a song, shouldn't I? I've just been yakking. I haven't really hit the jukebox very much here. Let's see. I'm sorry. A car just came into the diner parking lot, and I'm just looking to see where it goes, and it's going right next to my car. Of course. Of course. That's the thing that you fear the most when you get a new car. You live in dread of that initial door ding, and I don't know why this guy is parking next to my car. I parked at the absolute end of the lot. There are 16 spaces to the left. You know what? I think he has a new car, too. Huh. Maybe he assumes that I won't ding his door. Or maybe he's just going to get in there first. Maybe he's going to ding my door. Maybe there's some karmic ding redistribution program I don't know about, whereby if you're the first guy to ding somebody else's new car, your new car is exempt for however many months. Oh, why don't they just have new car areas of the parking lot that are wider than everyone else's so we don't have to worry about this? Well, looks like he was careful. Anyway, back to the jukebox. Let's see if they have stocked this thing with any tunes that seem to indicate my new joy in life? Huh. But of course, A1.
Yo, Mabel. Wild about board on automobiles that go. I don't know what there is about one. You can't get a girl without one. Ain't had a girlfriend for many a night. So I got that bugle, I'm doing all right. I'm wild about horns on automobiles that go. Thank you. when I blew that horn. You could tell it was a Ford. I bought a second-hand guitar from a friend of mine named Ray. And when I blew the horn, you could tell it was a Chevrolet. A man I knew named Rosenblum had a car that was his joy. And every time he blew his horn, it went like this, oi, oi. I'm a nut, I'm a pet, here's the one that I love best. I'm wild about horns on automobiles that go 35 bucks. I'm glad I saved my dough to buy one. Be in style, you ought to try one. Sirens or klaxons, the girls never fall. But I get attention when they hear that call. Wild about horns on automobiles that go.
Hey, I'm watching this guy. He picked up something from the takeout. Now he's going back to his car. Got another chance here to ding my door. You know, if only cars were really twitchy about these things and, say, exploded if you dinged them. That would make people more careful. You know, in movies, of course, if a car rolls over, it explodes. But if a car, if you slightly touched it with your own door, it completed some circuit and the other car blew up, or your car blew up, and you, or both. I don't know. I don't care. Just people would be an awful lot more careful. Well, looks like he... Let me get out my binoculars here and see if I... Now that he's gone, and see if I can find anything in the door. No, I'm safe. Anyway, that song you just heard was perhaps one of the first cars to make a songs to make an association between automobiles and their power to let you work your way on the opposite sex, but it was not the last.
Back to Rockport, Indiana.
No, you can't go back. I'll get the story on Old's Mobility. I've got to get a car. I've got to get a car to get a gal. Got to get a gal somehow. Now's the time. I'm in my prime. Got to get a gal right now. Got to get that car to get that gal. Got to get the gal I feel. No time to waste. Got to make haste. Got to get that gal.
Dude, a little saltpeter in the coffee. Just the word to the wise. What the hell is going on here? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. To what? Creepy song. It's like the cast of a musical theater production gears up for a gang rape. Gotta get a girl, gotta get a girl, gotta get a girl. Anyway, after you have the girl in your car, either having been lured by Old's Mobility or the promise of letting them toot your horn, what do you do with them? Why, naturally, you kick them out for not coming across.
Oh, I met a little chick in a neighborhood bar. I took her out for a ride in my brand new car. I said, hey, baby, move over close by my side. The chick moved way over to the other side. Uh-oh. You gotta walk home, baby. You gotta walk home, baby. You gotta walk home, baby, 'cause you just won't treat me right. We parked to look at the city lights. She said, it really is a very beautiful sight. So I moved a little closer to her so I could see. She said, oh no, daddy, move away from me. Uh-oh.
Get out of the car.
You gotta walk home, baby. You gotta walk home, baby. You gotta walk home, baby, 'cause you just won't treat me right. Said, but it's a long ways back to town, and I've got on my evening gown. I said, that's right, baby, and if you don't come on and try to treat me right, you'll be walking home the rest of the night. Uh-oh.
Get out of the car.
And into the trunk.
Walk home, baby. You gotta walk home, baby.
Man, I hate that song. Oh, another one. The car just pulled in the diner parking lot right next to mine. Thank you very much. Great. Ding. Go ahead. Ding. Oh, no. They're just leaping out. The guy all in black and a guy in yellow and green, they just leaped out simultaneously. Now they're standing around the parking lot, sort of looking agitated, like they expected something, and it's not here. And let me get my binoculars. Good thing I can lip read. And the guy in black with the mask over his head is saying to the something cave. Whatever. Just watch the door. Okay, good. They hopped back in the... Now, that'd be great. If everybody could just hop in the car like that without even opening the door at all, we wouldn't have any problems. Na 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 Honda. No, it doesn't quite work.
The 1958 Edsel. When you see it, you are sure it's the Edsel. When you drive it, then you know. It's the newest car in the world by far. The engine loaded with go, go, go. When you're out on the highway, the Edsel makes it fun to be alive. When you are in the Edsel, you wanna drive, wanna drive, wanna drive.
New in the way it looks, the way it rides, the way it drives. The Edsel, with exclusive new Teletouch Drive, puts the shift buttons in the center of the steering wheel. Its big, safer brakes adjust themselves automatically. And its big, new V8 Edsel engines put more usable power at your command than you have ever known. See, drive, and priced. 1958's only all-new car. And you'll find out you can afford the car you just fell in love with.
See your Edsel dealer, take a drive today.
This is the year to get out of that rut and into the most elegant car of your lifetime.
Well, I guess that's the kind of music that goes with an Edsel, if they say so. But the music that goes with your own car is something you decide for yourself. Swear to God, today I pulled the car out of the garage, turned on the satellite radio, and this is what came out of the soundtrack channel. Star Trek II Wrath of Khan Enterprise flyby music. So I backed the car out of McKinley Station, the garage, and took to the lakes. But you don't want to listen to Star Trek music as you go around the lakes. No, you need something more adult. It was a lovely spring afternoon, 80 degrees. I rolled down the window, drank in the aroma of the lakes, and on a day like this, with a car, brand new, the summer before you, there's only one thing you can do. Put on the Gleason. So, there you have it. I've got a new car. Life is good. And somebody just pulled up next to my car again. Oh, God. This time it's a beater, too. Bob's Sledgehammers. Sales and repairs.
Oh! Oh! He just buried his door into the side of my car. I'm gonna go out and talk to him. This is not gonna stand. This is simply not gonna stand. Excuse me, Mister. Yeah, Bob. Did you see what you just did? Look at this. Look at this. It's a brand new car yesterday. Look at the dent you put on the side of it. Yes, I want you to say, sorry is a start. Sorry is a really good start. We'll begin with sorry and work our way up to monetary compensation, okay? All right, now, wait. Hey, put that sledgehammer down, Bob. Oh, God. Not the other door. Not the window. At least leave me the back window. Not the gas tank.
Well, at least I have insurance. I just hope it covers Acts of Bob. Well, that'll do it for today, I guess. I'm James Lilex, and this has been The Diner for Friday, May 26, 2006. We'll see you next week with a brand new show. And a brand new car.